Okay? Let's move. We are on 20. Independent. Yeah. Agreed. 21. Praise God. Dedication and assignment, 22. These are administrative issues and in-house. Agreed. 23. Powers and functions of the registry derived from this act. Entlachter. Mm-hmm. 24. Under rules. Honorable Harris.
Chapter
21F.
Yes, yeah. Raising assumptions. I'm not sure how the registrar could make rules to start to raise assumptions. It's a matter of opinions. It's the core business of the rating entity. It's not something that we would, the registrar should be able to interfere. I don't think we can register opinions or assumptions.
Roland?
Thank you, Mr. Chin. Going back to the MOU currently completing with European Authority, one of the clear requirements is that a rating agency publish its rating assumptions and disclose what the rating assumptions are and what rating assumptions were used. And then it goes further than that, also that the rating assumptions have been adapted for particular instances, for example, South African conditions. And that would be specific for example, South African specific legislation, not broad as such.
Adamini, followed by Koranov, Honorable Koranov.
Thank you, Chief. Why am I waiting for the publication and understanding what is this after the committee also going to say this message? So can I second the removal, then can put it on the amendment to come to the amendment after you understand. We both understand, we're all the same thing, but that's why I don't think on the same case because we still have to do it.
Coronel?
I want to just put writing assumption in the definition.
Ten. You support Madeline's proposal. Oh, you know, I thought that you say Mike Minis. Because I never expected you to agree with Madeline. Honor from there?
Yeah, okay. As much as I understand the submission made by Honorable Madeline, but I think I'm more comfortable with the approach taken by Honorable
Corono
to suggest that let's concentrate on the definition of the rating assumption. Because if we don't do that, and we then expect the registrar to make some rules with regard to that in future, that might obviously leave this particular process incomplete. And I think it might also be another way of time to come back and focus on this one aspect. So I would suggest that maybe let's type things up at the definition section and ensure that we empower the register appropriately also to make rules in regard to ratings advantages. Thank you.
Agreed.
chair nicely that it comes back in a couple of issues that we agree to both proposals, so we will tighten up rating assumption process with the external process and we'll find that.
So when you say you are agreeing both, you are agreeing with both expansion?
So I think that the proposal, if I correct to you, report the proposal, we must just explain rating assumption in the sense that it's...
That's not what Mazani is for.
It says the action on the engagement or on the conversation with the EU regarding the rating assumptions. And according to the EU, the rating assumptions, we need to publish them. We need to say exactly what are those assumptions. This is what this is. Not that my understanding from what the FSC is saying. Now, then I say based on that, because the FSC still has to define what are the assumptions and publish those assumptions so that everybody is aware about them. So let us remove them for now.
Roland?
When the Honourable said we should park a drawing, we should amend that section of the 9 and the proposal is different.
Roland?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a point of clarity. The EU has requirements that you publish your rating assumptions. The MOU that we are currently completing is not something that we're negotiating. It's actually quite factual. There it is. Show us where you comply, and we will review it. If you are compliant, we will then, say that you are compliant. If not, you will have to go back and amend the legislation accordingly. But I'm going to leave it at that, and I'm going to be directed by Roy on that.
Roy?
Given me that the wording from the EU regulation says the recruiting agency shall refer to the public of methodologies, models, including key rating assumptions that users and spearheading activities as defined in 5, part 1, or section 1. We could look at either taking it out or following this wording to make it clear that we're not going to describe rating assumptions, we're going to describe some process or a methodology. We're open to either option.
Honorable Harry.
This section already deals with methodologies and assumptions. We have a sense of the base mind. And I believe I objected to it in the end, but nevertheless, that's the position. Section 10 discusses how the rating agency needs to declare its methodology and assumptions. I think Section 24, which we're considering now, goes much further. It allows the registrar to prescribe rules around rating assumptions and these sort of support. And I think Martin needs to puzzle that we need to delete it until we clarify the relation with you is the best one to write.
I'm
not going to
propose.
We discussed it and we haven't to
take it.
Yeah. I'm disappointed. Okay, fine.
Let me just check one. That implies that after you have then checked with EU, you then bring just an amendment. That must be taken. Is that a suggestion? Because I thought that it expected from the EU guidelines that we must provide rules on the as regards to rating assumptions. I thought this case.
To clear something up there. There was an original proposal by the European Union that they would become involved in signing off the methodologies and assumptions. We're not sure where they are with that. But one of the decisions we made in South Africa was that we would not get involved with the methodology. And hence, with your permission, can I take you? We just park this for 5 minutes and come back on it. But I don't think we want to make rules about rating assumptions. But I need to just check with my colleague now with him about it. What's actually in this part?
We have to take up rating assumptions, so that's the one option. The second option is to not say the rules are with respect to rating assumptions, but the rules are with respect to the process of arriving at trading assumptions, which is a slightly more nuanced version, but I mean, it's unnecessary to...
Well, let me just say this first. obviously, we are trying to put together a piece of legislation to regulate this sector. Some of the things are not quite clear at the moment. A proposal by another means to say let's exclude it for now. And when I say for now, it means go and look into this thing. Honorable Kuan also said, I have some approach to into a definition. To insert this thing in the definition part of it. So just go and work out something along those lines. You know, whether we need it or we don't need it. It's something that can be determined later, or not in the next 5 minutes. Around. Okay. But for now, we expand it, and then go and do what you need to. Honorable Nyange?
It is a decision on what you are saying. It's a shock to them that there is no collaboration between FIC and this one. We can't continue like this when we deal with contentious issues, and then they don't find each other, then we have to break. That's why they need to close that gap.
But before I arrive, you must think that you had one. But as things get raised, you realize that you may not have the same and common interpretation of issues. That's what Honorable Member Yenge is saying. You don't have to respond. Let's move to 25. Honorable Nick Bernal.
I'm a little bit uncomfortable with 25.1A. You know, why not speak with the inspector appointed in terms of section 2 and then just say in that second, like you're carrying out an on-site visit or an inspection. But why a suitable person, why a suitable person go to any office by the command of the registrar and say, I'm banning on this door? Why do you need that if you've got all the power to do it in any event in terms of that?
Before, Honorable Harris wants to say something also, so that then your point is going to both.
The person pointed with somebody from the registrar's office. So it would be an analyst that has experience of this type of matters and know what he's looking for, and it would be a clean sort of inspection, and recognize that through all these years, perform these on-site visits, and for all the other industries apart from for the financial advisors and the pension funds, he has done it by consent of the industry. But it appears that in some instances it was required that he had some power so that the institution can not merely say no, we're not allowing you in. So I think the thinking behind is that when somebody registers or not, the on-site visit is only aimed at registered entities, whereas your inspections are also going to look at unregistered entities. It is aimed at the ministerial type of map.
Okay. Judith?
Can you therefore say something one? The minister may authorize any specific person to conduct an on-site, then this is to cut as great one that the minister may authorize that person to on-site. Because I was also coming to the point to say I don't overthink that thing is correct for me to leave it because there's an inspector on that there is someone appoint. Is he also specific to the point that is this in? And I'll be going to have a problem with all this, around the person. There's no specific, it's not too general. No, I mean,
yeah. Okay, I'll go ahead and walk, followed by Tim.
I just want to ask
this
question. It's probably possible, but rating agency and agent, but can they conduct a criminal activity? You know, I'm very happy to give this to the Financial Services Board if they knock more often on the doors of the Pretoria and the others. And I will give them that. But do they really need that sort of behavior for pre-credit rating agencies? I think they're free as well.
Richard?
I can answer that. I was an inspector for a long time, and my experience was that anyone less alone can think of criminal activities to conduct. So, certainly not really in any examples in our country that I'm aware of, but one reads what's happening in the U.S. There are instances where some of the smaller agencies have collided with issuers to get investors in their products, so there will always be scenarios where somebody can think of us, you know, I'm not saying that I think that we are currently aware of, you know, in our country, we are, but you never know what happens in the future, and who is planning something at this stage and setting a shop to do so. So I think that's the sort of scenario we want to make sure that, you know, that we are ready for anything that happens in the future. And A is not intended to criminalize. The moment there is suspicion of an unregistered agent conducting something criminal, then the rest of the force is taken and follow the more stringent procedures to inspection.
Yeah, Tim, I thought you'd call him as a name. No, Tim.
Chair, what is the justification for not simply relying on 25.1b and the extensive framework provided by the Inspection of Financial Institutions? I've just looked at the details it provides for the powers of inspectors, and I think it's sufficient. I don't understand why we need to give the registrar power to afford that.
We already got 25.1B. Why do we need 25.1A? I don't think that it has been limited by the American Institute. The reason being that if you go down there and look at the power given to this person who has to go on site and do the visit, if he cares for the power to appoint another person, then information. So
Now, in what criteria they're going to use to select this individual in the system? Is that it has identified that by their mind, that they have a complete loophole?
Aren't we trying to spell out in detail really what the registrar may do in relation to the inspector?
The power of the inspector or captured in the Inspection Act, and I agree that these are similar powers, but I must say that these provisions thank you very much word by word from the Financial Advisory and Intermediary Service Act, where the register was given exactly these exact same powers. And I think it was given to the register there because of the problems that the register experienced in when you want to conduct an off-site system that you might encounter a resistance. So that there is now, when the person appointed by the register, formal appointment, the register has to apply to my that it's a suitable person, a person with experience that will understand that person, and then he has to decide to ask for the information. And this is all powers and measures that the register, I think, in experience that comes from the necessity to be able to properly supervise the
system.
Then take better they think, why then the children run away for the, you know, the common and when the system is doing below the decision talk rather than the suitable person. Because now the rest is somebody saying I'm putting to something that open to the children. And this suitable person to the committee and to the house that even to the heart and to the side not really something in another place, not what we mean by suitable person. It's not even put our definition to the floor.
Yeah, can I get a concrete proposal and then we move on this one? Are you proposing, do I hear committee members saying they are proposing that 1A should be left out and then B is sufficient?
So, and I might have missed to the earlier explanation because of being a victim of mind mapping, you know, as a teacher, thinking of other things along the finger. So, I didn't get the specific reason why can't we only confine, of course, I suppose, by honorable error, why can't we only confine the inspection services to the inspector that has been appointed in terms of Section 2 of the Inspection of Financial Institutions. Why can't we confine that responsibility only to that person? I might have used the explanation at the beginning. What is compelling us to say, I mean, to the minister, might have the power to appoint any suitable person?
The explanation that they've been giving on our company is that they have taken almost weight for weight from other pieces of legislation similar. But the magnitude of the problem may not be the same. Roland?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to add to this. Once again, in terms of completing the MOU, the IOSCA MOU is a cooperation MOU. The ESPA MOU is cooperation and record enforcement. And one of the requirements they have, for example, is if there was an issue between that authority in that country and someone conducting business in South Africa, one of the things in terms of the MOU you have to agree to is that you will conduct on-site business and yes, you will also use the inspectors. I think the two are different from each other. One is the requirements of the on-site visit, it's like an annual audit. In the pension department, they conduct on-site visits regularly. And that's how we see it. It has no negative intent other than it can, but it also includes an annual audit to see if there's compliance with that.
Pardon me?
I think what you're saying, but I really do not agree that you must be all of our requesting is that this is not using a suitable person. Why not use it as a common way, which is using it in court? If maybe it is illegal, it is the thinking proper, a person, but if you look at it, if it is, say exactly, if it is the A check, this A person, as you go down, you can see they have already been given, because they stand from the other half of the legislation, they have already been given the competencies, the things that you're supposed to do according to this A.
Can I also make interpretive assumption in terms of the criteria of appointing a register? The fit and proper will start with that person. And the assumption is that that register is a very responsible person, him or her. Do you have any problems then in executing his duty, the delegation? He should then assign a suitable person to go and do on-site with certain operational method. There are problems with that, honorable member. Because if we want to say, let's define suitable person, we may actually go back and say, what do you mean by fit and proper? You know? Conroy, I think you've been.
Yeah, I think that explanation really covered my concern, because inshallah I didn't draw a line between on-site visit and inspection.
Yeah.
So according to explanation, these are two different factors. So I think I'm comfortable with, to leave 1A intact. I don't think there's any harm.
Honorable Yenge?
Yeah, in fact, I concur with that motion. An operational matter like this one cannot be a responsibility of the register. When one says a suitable person doesn't refer to anybody, there must be a hidden yes to the ability. So there will be a specific aspect that will identify a suitable person in a hotel with the content of this case.
So this is also in almost controlling any suitable person. If they run a, let's say, say a suitable person, I want to bring to your attention in C, but you can show on C. It says now, when you read it again, this any that is a problem. It says now, around it require any person to provide any relevant data. It also goes further when you go to one down there. It says associate consent to any step refrain from performing or continuing to perform any act. So when you read it, person, the issue of any, it's really, really unnecessary. So it takes away the bones and the meat. So if we say, of course, it's any suitable person, then when you read around the duty of that person, so already a suitable person, it will say require
has required
every
person to provide
relevant and necessary information. So it reads even if we take out this game, so that you don't, it doesn't become very open. So it's very difficult.
Tim, and
Gordon. I think it would be useful for all the members to take a look at the inspection of arrangements of the Machines Act, which is crystal clear on how it would give incentives to enter certain premises, open any strong room safe or any other container, and make excerpts or copy any documents. These are extensive powers given to specific inspectors and citizens act, and we invoke all of them in 25.1b. There's no logic, nobody dare to answer my question why we need to give the red tribe further power to put any person. But as you say, there's an entire act that defines how these inspectors are to be appointed, what they can do. Why do you want to give the register more powers than what the defines in this act? I think if the minister read this act, that would be
quite
Section 5.1b.1, an inspector may enter and search any premises for any document, enter any premises that require the production of any document, open any strong room safe by the containers. These are powers. And they're specifically given in civil act. why do we want to go beyond that?
If
the Treasury is not happy with the financial institution at the inspection office, they never change that. But if there's not going to be a conflict between these two acts, which act would now take precedence? The inspection act or this act? Where's the limit? And then you don't need to definitely then force the Treasury. And neither. Come back to some serious stuff. You're not happy with the financial institution and change it.
According to this discussion, from my limited understanding, that there is a difference between inspection and on-site visit. I don't know if I'm correct or maybe, because in my take, inspection might be, on-site visit might be something that precedes inspection. And only the register must be empowered then to assign anyone to cover, to conduct on-site visit before an inspection. And then if readers understand, I don't see any harm of having this particular 1A, a cap in the base.
Can I just provide clarity to
what
in terms of this act, specifically says the inspector may enter any premises, which to me covers the on-site.
Mm-hmm. Correct. But what I'm saying is, what is the need of some reconnaissance that must be conducted? Obviously, there must be an on-site visit, on-site visit that is conducted before inspection.
And
it's
allowed.
Yeah.
But
Okay. Dialogue. What? In terms of that act, Honorable Gorono, are you there? Nick? In terms of the act, in fact, I want to hear from National Treasury and FSB. Are you suggesting that what we are trying to do in terms of Section 1A, is catered for in terms of that act? Okay. Rita.
Thank you, sir. I think I'm just saying that the FSB really views as two separate processes. One is the on-site visit, which the routine sort of audit annually. There doesn't have to be a concern, there doesn't have to be a complaint for the registrar to be proactive in the supervision of financial institutions. Inspection, now I agree that they have similar power to inspection act and certain conducting an on-site visit. But the inspection act now is utilized by the registrar in the FSB is aimed at a more serious scenario. And practically how it's structured in the FSB is that there's a separate department it's the department of the FSB, but it's called the driving inspectors that have experience and expertise in a wide range of matters. Whereas the analysts in the registrar's office are specialists on that specific industry that registrar looks after. So we make an ask to a financial advisor or to a pension fund administrator or a credit rating agency, they will be experts in what they are looking at. Whereas with inspectors, more often than not, the registrar would have received a complaint and would ask the inspector to investigate that specific complaint. And as Honourable Member van Rooy indicated, very often it happens that the inspection follows an on-site visit. So an analyst will go out routinely and then he will notice something of concern and he will go back to the registrar and the registrar will send in the inspector.
So you didn't have it in the law. You did not have this section. Thus, is there anything that prohibits the registrar from assigning a suitable person to go and do an on-site visit? Do you need it in law?
What has happened before we had in law was that the registrar would send out the analysts do regular on-site visits. But if there's any resistance, if the entity says, no, I want to allow you to do this, I don't want you to look at that, then that person doesn't really have powers. Obviously the register would say, if you don't cooperate with my personnel, I can withdraw your license. But sometimes it's necessary to prepare evidence or take immediate action. The case person, the registrar can appoint the analyst of the inspector. But I think the experience has shown that in the industry where inspection is conducted, it seems in its different light. Everyone is concerned, and the EPP will get an inquiry whether there are any problems at the entity because the inspectors are there. Somebody employed by the registrar in the line department is doing an archive, everyone knows that they have seen that.
Hello, Corono.
If you look at section 2, 25(2), you give the power to that on-site suitable person, you give all the power he can do. Now imagine I take this place with me, going on a on-site visit. I can spot the office. I can eat everything I want to. I can ask anyone any questions. I can basically do what they expect. That's what you want to answer. I don't know. You then take out those files and then tell us what this on-site person is all about. But with, you're giving the on-site suitable person inspector power in terms of that. That's all.
Madame?
And give it to a person, there's no problem with it where the power of things they give it to another person by the register to the discuss. But the truth is that the way they copy to the financial aid to give it to an on-site person who can't go and do an on-site visit. Then they got one of the person and say, you see the document, you can't. Because you're going there for an on-site visit, then you have to combine it with what give it back to the registrar, then the registrar appoints the inspector to go and do and carry those tasks or duties that are dedicated to him.
Okay. If you know it, the presence of any person from any office, whether the Department of Labor, in a small operation in Victoria, whether the person wears a uniform or not, by the mere fact that he or she says, I am from this department, the level of anxiety is there. They don't know what the difference between a suitable person and an inspector. They don't know. They've got a visitor from a particular department, so their reaction is the same. So it can be a motivation that this one has got less acrimony in terms of his approach than this one. But when you go and look into what the duties of this person, what he or she can do, it's almost the same, as an inspector. And now I'm inclined to say perhaps let's just delete A. Unless it will cause catastrophe, there will be an earthquake and a tsunami in this administration. Because for me, it's inherent. I don't know. I mean, you are saying to me, somebody will then walk in and say, I don't want to comply. And in terms of the act, because this crippled person has not been defined, it's a crisis. I think, maybe I should just stop here. Roy?
Chair, and the committee, we will take it out. The implication is we're obviously going to take up 25(2). And larger amounts of the other cost of the act. However, I mean, the point of emerging with this.
Maybe while we are still caucusing, I think this is empowered by sudden about tech, because I thought it was a reason for on-site visit. So maybe respond to your question that says you have copied or you have covered this cut and paste the duties of an inspector to that one of on-site visit. Can we get that at it? Because definitely, I mean, there is a reason for this on-site visit.
Yeah, well, I don't think that there's an argument about whether there should be an on-site visit or not. I don't think there's an argument there. There's no argument whether there should be an on-site visit or not. The question is who will do those. Right.
If I can continue what I was trying to say. So, as it is, we are happy. We must just think through the implications of taking out section 25.1a in terms of the conducting on-site visits. What it would mean is we'd have to obviously take out almost entire section 25, and it does limit the ability of registrar. I think particularly the need for the registrar to ensure that the information being provided is correct and not correct. And so, I just want to make the point that if you do take out section 25, one day which we could do, it would substantially make a difference in entire section 25. So, I think it would overly constrain the ability of the registrar to be able to perform its functions under it, particularly on the on-site inspections. Just the ability to do a regular sort of on-site inspection of the regular day. So, I would like to highlight the implication of taking out the track. Of taking out this 1A. Okay, so simply taking out this 1A is actually taking out the potential power of the regulator to be able to enforce the legislation. So, that's the point I was trying to.
Okay.
I think Roy's assessment is correct, but I'll explain to members why I don't think that's possible, because what remains if you do that, the 25.1b, which involves the inspection of financial institutions act, and I think if members read that act, they would see that it provides for everything that the registrar could possibly want, in terms of bills or inspections or anything. It's a very comprehensive access. It provides appropriate powers that limits them in the appropriate ways. And I think it's totally sufficient. And the members will agree with me, I think, if there is a
I think what that you're saying is that, you know, the duties of the inspection is based on the act. But when it comes to the 5A, it says the last sentence to register trees related to determine compliance with this act. So there is a reference on this act that we know about. The inspectors, the financial institutions act, as a reference document that they implement. I don't think it makes sense necessarily for us to go through when looking to the duties. Let's go to number 2 and say that this is duty by book and check regularly, can we remove other duties? So that I think the point that was raised is that experience the court that at high end there is a latency to allow for the process. So when you say definitely then we can be able to open up the door. So I'm being encouraged for us to look into that, if we can look into the duties and remove experience with deciding to do the translation and other things specific to, I'm not sure that is the proposal.
Can I ask one question? Because if we argue or we debate this matter about the inspector or the inspectorate as a person, but if we are talking about an officer, I think there's a difference. An inspectorate office. Because this any suitable person cannot come outside that office. Am I correct? Roland? I'm saying if we look at this the issue of the registrar may appoint any suitable person. And then you go further on to speak about an inspector. What does this act do? Once it has established all these institutions, there will be an office, isn't it? The inspectorate office. And within that office, there will be individuals appointed to do this and that and that and that and that. Now, any suitable person that you're talking about is for this office, isn't it? No? Okay. Well, I haven't heard specifically whether FSB or Mr. Treasurer has responded to that. Because if what Honorable Harris is saying is that what we are trying to actually achieve here is already addressed in terms of that particular act, is he correct? it's difficult for me to make head or tail of, you know, this argument. You say in terms of the inspector act, and you can't find commonalities with what we are trying to achieve in terms of the actual register, in terms of this act. If they do have the same power, does that address what you want to see with the people discussing?
I think it addresses it in legislation, but I also think it's been discussed. The registrar felt the need through the years of developing the current system. And as at first it was more on a consent basis, a contract was conducted. And at such time it was the need to start to make it more formal, and that's why these styles were brought into legislation. And that's why maybe historically there's a distinction on the face of it in the legislation.
For us to retain section 1A, because if the inspector can do this, or maybe the person who is conducting on-site business can do the same thing that can be done by the inspector. Now definitely we are creating a lot of uncertainty. So I will suggest that we remove section 1A, and obviously with all those related sections in this clause. Thank you.
Agreed. What? Can you quickly respond to the question? Madame?
I don't see what the honourable gentleman is saying about 25.1a. the entity has been seen most of the time during this and later part of the decisions are not very clear to come in all of the decisions that they were done, and as a result they are trying to align them. The question is, if my parents are giving me the reasons that she's referring to, they think what it means they are naming it, what it means there is something wrong with them. So I am proposing that we think, let us cut this.
No, we're not touching this one.
Okay.
No, you see, I think I've been trying to resist you. If you look at 3, it says after an on-site visit or inspection. Why can't you leave this thing with the inspector? Because B, it says the registrar may instruct an inspector appointed in terms of this act. There's no suitable person appointed in terms of this act and the definition of the suitable person at the beginning. So I think we have deliberated this matter and as a committee, we have heard of you. From what I'm thinking, I think 258 is not relevant. The registrar in terms of this act, inspection on site, the registrar may instruct the inspector. And the inspector must clear out these things. How he does that is something else. Because that office of the inspector is not one person. How constitute your organogram and all other things really is not for the committee to get into that. But I don't think it can be boxed down by a suitable person, where the act is very clear. Because if you look at B, instruct an inspector appointed in terms of section 2 of the inspection of Financial Institutions Act. That's what he is referring to. Yeah, can we move on this one? Sandra?
Yeah, I was just trying to hope that we agree with your conclusion, Chair. It must be, of course, in subsequent aspect in this third clause, because I think if you look into subsection 8, 1A, obviously, if you remove it, then you must remove also 2. And obviously, you must structure some of the sentences where this online business is referred. So I was just trying to say.
Yeah.
Okay.
Whether the inspector wants to do an on-site visit or wants to do an inspection, that is immaterial for us. Let the inspector go into his work. Us to have an agreement in terms of what we've dealt with today. There's one issue that we have passed. What was that issue?
Liability.
Clause 19. All other things in terms of what we've permitted and the amendments and the corrections, when we come back next week on the pre-determined date or when it's determined date, we're not going to repeat that. On 25, I think there's consensus, but 25A, 1A, is not something that we can retain the act itself.
Well, there was one more, as well as Section 19, there was also going to come back on 241F, the rating assumption.
Yeah, no.
The second one.
No, we've removed that. We said they must go and do. Yeah. We've removed that one. Okay. So when we come back, we're starting from 26. You'll work on 19? It's 19 now. don't have to have officially so.
Yes.
Yeah. 90. Yeah, that's the only point that I think we need to work on and connect. Then we take this piece of the bin. Yeah, no, they'll be informed. We'll inform them when to connect. At the moment, the secretary says probably on Wednesday next week, but we'll officially communicate to you. Honorable members, thanks for your attention. Yeah. Let's agree that we again discuss for today until further notice, probably Wednesday next week, to take the remainder of this forward. Thank you. Roy, your team, and the RSB, Roland, and Rita, thank you very much. Thank you.